Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and today we have a very special guest visiting us. His name is Joe Meyer. He is from Straight Money Analysis, but more importantly, he is also part of FINRA and understands all the rules and regulations that have to be done through FINRA. Joe Meyer, welcome to the Bubba Show.
Good morning, Todd. Thank you for having me as a guest on the Bubba Show. It's always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience.
It's great to have you on, Joe. So I guess, you know, first of all, I know you've been in the business just a little bit longer than me. I'm in the 30s. You're in the 40s. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and what you have done and what you've gone through over the years.
Well, you know, I first got involved in the markets in 1966. I was 19 years old and made my first investments in the stock market. And then in 1967, got drafted into the Army during the Vietnam War and came back in 1969 and wanted to go up on Wall Street. But as you know, at that time, the markets were not good and the firms were not hiring. So I had to wait till 1972 to go up on the street. I was able to get employed by a regional brokerage firm by the name of Edwards & Hanley and went through the brokerage training and became licensed and started in the business. And then shortly thereafter joined Merrill Lynch, where I established myself as a very good young producer in the business. And then shortly after that relocated to Florida, where I've been here ever since, and worked for three other firms on the street, Shearson, and I had worked for Payne Weber as well. And then I had decided that I would become a professional equity trader and stock market strategist, which we did in the late 1970s. Became a registered investment advisor in 1980. Continued to trade the markets for our clients. And then in 1995, I had joined the NASD as an industry arbitrator. And then shortly thereafter, the NYSE as an industry arbitrator. And then I was granted mediator status by both forums, which you know now is FINRA.
So, you know, you do and you've done, obviously, almost the whole gamut. I mean, you've done from the brokerage to trading to now regulation, and now you have your own newsletter. Again, it's Straight Money, which is an excellent read, Straight Money Analysis. So, Joe, I guess first thing is, you know, the regulating body of FINRA. Can you tell us a little bit about FINRA and what their purpose is in the industry?
Well, our purpose is to protect the investing public. They regulate the broker-dealers and the member firms throughout the world. And I've been with them now, as I said, going on 20 years. I've been a panel chairman. I've been a public arbitrator. I offer my services, as you know, Todd, in security law cases to member firms and certainly public customers. And I'm also still mediating for FINRA on a very active basis, along with writing the quarterly newsletter, StraightMoneyAnalysis.com, which we started in 2009.
What is the difference between FINRA and the SEC?
Well, FINRA, I think, moves in much different areas than the SEC. The SEC, as you know, is basically a federal agency, and FINRA, as you know, works very closely with the state regulators as well.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. I don't know if you can answer it. And obviously, I never want to have any compliance issues on air with somebody who can't answer. But I have a big problem with guys tweeting out, you know, big traders. I'm not mentioning any names here, but that tweet out their position. And, of course, they actually drive the market. Why is that not regulated by somebody and why is it allowed?
That's a good question. And honestly, Todd, I don't have the answer to that.
Okay. All right, so we know your stuff. We know you're a law-abiding trader and you're a regulator and you understand it all. But let's get into some of the things that are happening. So tell us about Straight Money Analysis and what can I look forward to getting from Straight Money Analysis?
Well, Straight Money Analysis writes about the things that I truly believe matter. We tell you why they matter, and we tell you what you can and should be doing about them. I write pretty extensively, as you know, on the U.S. economy. We write on the equity and bond markets. We also write very extensively on the precious metals, both gold and silver. We also write, again, very extensively on the energy sector, both crude oil and natural gas. And then lastly and finally, we write again in great detail in every issue of the newsletter on Fed monetary policy.
So as we look, let's go to, I think, a very sore spot for me, and that is Fed monetary policy. What's your take? What's your opinion? What would you do about it?
Well, I think we're making history here. I think what we've witnessed, certainly by the central banks of the world, and I'm sure you'll agree, Todd, has been unprecedented. I think the bigger story and the bigger concern moving forward is not a question of if, but when rates start to move back up. You know, we've never had a monetary experiment like this in history, and I think there's a lot of things here that can go wrong, and honestly, I think the Fed at this point is being very cautious.
In your opinion, and again, you don't have to answer if you choose not to, but in your opinion, did they do a good job? Are they doing a good job? And are you a supporter?
Well, I think they did at the time what was absolutely necessary. I think they might have left rates certainly at these levels a little too long. I think we should have seen rates start to move up probably sometime last year. But I do believe at some point we'll see higher rates, and I think the wild card that we're all trying to figure out is how the markets will react when that reality certainly takes place.
Because I do not believe the Fed did a very good job. I've been on the initial bailout. I'm still on the fence. I can't make up my mind whether it was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. But subsequently, for the last 5 years after that, I think they've done a horrendous job at managing this economy. And because of their economic policies, all they're doing is pushing out the inevitable that this market is going to have some major problems. What do you think?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think these markets are going to have some major problems. I think they may have them sooner than later. I think when you look at what the central banks of the world have done in coordination to push these rates down, you know, this is a problem now that goes far beyond, as I'm sure you'll agree, Todd, what we're going to face here in the U.S.
Well, again, I'm not happy at the manipulation by all of the central banks around the world. I don't understand why we feel so compelled to have to support equity markets, because what we're really doing is we're creating a mess for a lot of the elderly that
are
in fixed income, and that, I think, will be a bigger problem down the road. What do you think?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think if you go back and you look at history, you know, we currently have the lowest rates going all the way back to make a comparison to what we saw in the Great Depression of the 1930s.
So at this point, is there anything that you would recommend that the Fed does, in your opinion?
Well, I think when we talk about the equity markets, we talk about the bond markets, I think there's great risk now in these markets. You know, as I've said in many issues of the newsletter, I'm of the belief that the upside in the equity markets are very limited, and I believe the downside is very great. But having said that, I continue to believe, aside of the equity markets, that there's even a bigger risk and a bigger threat when these rates move up to what we're going to witness in the bond market.
And I don't disagree with that either. And we're gonna come back and talk to Joe here about more about markets and more about what he writes about, because a very seasoned pro, been around, and again, because of his background, we want to delve in and we'll dance around a few numbers and try to get his opinions on gold and on oil and on the rest of the space. But in the meantime, this is the Bubba Show. I am with Joe Meyer from StraightMoneyAnalysis.com. Check out his website. Nice stuff. Very good. Very professionally done letter, and I think it provides a lot of great information. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after break with more with Joe Meyer. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm hanging out with Joe Meyer, a Straight Money Analysis, but actually a 44-year veteran of the industry, from the brokerage end to the regulation end to FINRA, and now, as he told me, his final project is writing his quarterly newsletter, straightmoneyanalysis.com. So, Joe, first of all, what is, you know, in case someone wants to follow you and see what you're doing, what's your Twitter handle?
Well, my Twitter handle is just jmeyeronm@aol.com.
Okay, that's your email. Okay. I was looking via Twitter where we could tweet and put out your information as well. So, Joe, we look around, and, of course, we've got the commodities space in itself crashing. We've got problems throughout the world. Everything is at lows that haven't been seen for a long time. In fact, the Bloomberg Commodity Index is down to levels not seen since like 2000.
True.
What is your take of the commodity space?
Well, I think, honestly, it's been a long, painful decline, but I do believe we're in the process of putting in a major bottom. Doesn't mean we see the lows today or tomorrow, but I've got to believe, Todd, at this point we're pretty close. You know, commodity bull markets, and you've been around almost as long as I have, they last typically about 18 to 20 years. So if we go back and we look at the inception of this commodity bull, whether you want to put the lows in 99 or 2001, I think it's really irrelevant. And you take a look at what these markets have done, you know, prior to this long, painful correction. I've got to believe, you know, the biggest gains in these commodity markets are not behind us. Honestly, Todd, I believe they're still in front of us. And I think when you talk about the metals, yes, we've had a very painful, long, drawn-out correction, but I think it's very similar and very comparable to the correction we had seen in the 70s bull market before we seen gold make a move to 850. So going back and looking at that correction we had in that 75, 76 pullback in gold, we went from basically 200 down to 100 and then went in almost a straight line to 850. So, you know, my belief is once we put this low in, whether we put it in at 1080, 1050, 990, it's really a moot point. I think we got the possibility once we put in the low and it's confirmed for the upside to be eight times what turns out to be the bottom. So if I'm right on that, and I think history is certainly indicating that it can repeat, we're looking like an eightfold increase once we put the lows in, basically what's ahead of us in gold and silver.
Well, it's funny you mention that markets always repeat themselves. That's a big common theme of myself, the Bubba Show, and my trading partners. So what makes you say that markets do repeat themselves and trades do repeat themselves? Explain to the listening audience what that means to you.
Well, I don't think we ever get away from human nature. I think human nature drives our emotions. Our emotions make us do the things that we undertake in the market. And I think we go back and we look at similar periods and similar circumstances and the way people reacted to certainly what was happening. And I think there are an awful lot of similarities, although there are differences. As you know, every market is different. But I think you've got to look at what happened before, what worked before, what the fundamentals and the technicals looked like, certainly before the major move got underway. And I think, honestly, from a fundamental standpoint, and I'm not downplaying the technicals for a minute because I think they're getting stronger by the day as we start to approach this bottom. You know, I think this is an opportunity we're going to look back on. It's going to be once in a lifetime once this market starts back to the upside, Todd. I really believe it.
You know, I mean, it's just there's so many things. And of course, I'm a student of history and I've studied, you know, major bubbles going back to Tulip Mania and all through all cycles. And of course, I talk a lot about the South Sea bubble, which was in the 1700s, which actually just finally 6 months ago just got paid back the final amount of money that was lost in that, believe it or not. But I mean, so I do say with a great deal of certainty that these markets will collapse again and they will have a correction. It does not mean that you shouldn't invest, but what it does mean is that you should be more cautious and certainly up at the upper end of this nosebleed section that we're in the house of cards that we've built. I think you need to be really cautious. What do you think?
Well, I think, as I've said many times, you know, there's times to be in the market. There's times to be out of the market. There's times to take money off the table. You know, I think if you've got some gains, and I think most people are sitting on some pretty halfway decent gains, if you were able to get into the equity market at the reactionary lows, which, as you know, Todd, in March of 2009 was Dow 6470 and the S&P 670, you know, you're talking a tripling of the averages in 6 years. I mean, there's no need to get greedy and be a pig. Take some money off the table and get to the sidelines here.
So, you know, now I'm a big advocate, and I have a strategy that we have developed to hedge a portfolio for those who don't like to get out of the market, because there's a lot of people that hate to sell. And
right.
There are ways to protect without giving up the potential profit. And that's
true.
What I believe is a way to use options to hedge that overall portfolio. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's a good idea. I think if the investor is suitable for that kind of strategy and they understand what you're attempting to do in the market and understand the risk certainly these markets represent when you employ leverage, I think it's fine. Is it a strategy for everybody? No. But then again, there's not a strategy for everybody in these markets anyway.
Yeah, actually, I do believe that hedging is for everybody because it's a long-term. In fact, my 86-year-old mother does it for her portfolio. And of course, she's been able to benefit without being able to sleep at night, knowing that if the market does collapse, actually, she'll be able to buy some more stocks for her grandchildren because she'll actually accumulate enough cash. But, you know, when you look around you and you see all of the worldwide problems, you look at Greece, for example. You know, Greece just opened on Monday their markets, and of course they got hammered, and our markets don't really care. Does it bother you that we are so complacent as investors right now, that everybody just feels that no matter what happens, the Fed's going to be there to pick them up?
Well, I think complacency is a major problem. I think, honestly, a lot of investors have thrown, as I think you'll agree, Todd, caution to the wind. You know, we've not had a decent correction in these markets in over 4 years. It's long overdue. And I think when people, you know, saw the corrections that we had prior, they were with the mentality buy the dip. And I think the mentality now has to revert and be seller rallies. Because I think the upside here is limited. I think the downside is great. I think there's a black swan coming out of nowhere that's going to upset these markets. And I think they're going to start down, and everybody, honestly, is going to scramble to try to get out at the same time. You know, you got to take money off the table when these markets are going up. You know, everybody tries to sell once a market starts down. You got to sell into a rising market. You buy into a falling market, you sell into a rising market. I think people lost sight of that and they forget that.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that because that's always the case. You know, it's like in a fire, and I don't want to bring a tragedy into trading. But when there's a fire in a building, the reason that a lot of people don't survive is because they're fighting each other to get out of the door. And there's nowhere to go. And when the markets start to sell off, it's the same thing. Everybody's trying to do the same thing. It's not a secret. And sometimes you just have to be happy with a profit that you've made and move on, or protect it some way so that you don't have to be one of the people. You know, it's like the rats trying to get out of a hole, you know, climbing over each other to get out. What do you think, sir?
Well, let me say this to you. You buy fire insurance before the fire and not after.
Yeah, that's true. They won't. Unfortunately, they won't sell it to me. You know, it's like if I can buy life insurance, you know, after I'm dead, it'd be great. But, I mean, these are, you know, important things that, you know, a lot of people, and here you're somebody who's been, you know, in the business. I mean, you're a seasoned veteran. I mean, you know, again, I think it's we can never stress importance enough how important it is to be ready, to be willing to take a profit. And unfortunately, most people are willing to take small profits and hold on for big losses. What do you think about that?
Well, that's exactly what they do. That's the mentality, and that's why they're not successful in the market. You know, you cut your losses early and you let your profits run. And as I've said over the years, you stick with a trend until it's no longer valid. And then you start the process all over again, and you look for undervaluation, you look for value, and you look for situations that people don't understand for whatever reason that represent good long-term value in the market. You know, markets take patience, and I think you'll agree that that's one of the things we see lacking in a lot of investors. They don't have the patience to let these markets do what they do best, and that's reprice assets.
Hold that thought. Joe Meyer, StraightMoneyAnalysis.com. fortunate enough to join us today. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. We've been writing about Joe Biden being the new president, the new elect, before anybody else was. But check it out, thebubbashow.org. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after break with more from Joe Meyer.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with Joe Meyer from StraightMoneyAnalysis.com, 44-year veteran of the markets, worked for Lynch, worked for Payne Webber, has seen it all, a number of crashes as well as some big rallies, also is a arbitrator for FINRA, the governing body that can help you out. So Joe, we're here, and again, we discussed the patience. When you say patience, what are you saying to the average investor? What do they need to be patient about?
Well, I think you've got to understand markets move in their time, not yours. And I think a lot of times people put on a position and they have unrealistic expectations over the short term what that position can do in the market. And I think you've got to let the markets, and again, I'll say it, do what they do best, and that's reprice asset classes. And if you're in a rock-solid position, and you're in a rock-solid position, the simplest thing and the hardest thing to do is just sit and let the markets do what they do best.
And I think that's always the point, and that is also separates the difference between what we would call a trader and an investor. Now, you know, we get confused in today's world about trading and investing, and because of technology, I think too many people look at their long-term investments way too often. What do you think?
Couldn't agree with you more. You're absolutely right.
And, you know, so when you see this happening, it becomes to affect the people that really can afford to have that effect the least, and that is people that are either on fixed income or are retiring. You know, the unfortunate thing about what's happened, Joe, in this economy is that people work their whole life to put money away, so that they, by the time they get to either their pension or Social Security, they can live basically the same life they lived before. They just don't have to go to work. You know, they've saved enough money and they hope to spit off enough interest or yield and, you know, and make that money and not really touch the principal, because nobody knows how long you're going to live and you want to make sure you have enough to go. But I think at this point, have we not forced too many people into the equity markets that don't have any interest in being there?
Oh, I think that's an excellent point. And again, I couldn't agree with you more. So, I think that needs to be said. And honestly, I don't think it's said enough.
No, and I mean, I think that that's an important point, because you have to be able to sustain. Otherwise, what happens is we now see a big competition for jobs, because a lot of the fixed incomers have to work at McDonald's, Walgreens, Walmart. I mean, is that not a tragedy when we have to start seeing our people that want to retire having to go work part-time jobs just to get by?
Well, I think it is a tragedy. I think it speaks volumes as to what has gone on in this economy, and honestly, for far too many years. I think when we get back to, again, you know, the destructive force of these low interest rates, and certainly what they've done and affected the savings of many retirees who were dependent upon interest income, certainly to supplement their Social Security along with other investments. You know, I've said many times during my long career on the street, Todd, and I've said this to people when I manage money, and they wanted certainly to be part of the markets. I said, the hard question we have to answer, are you going to be in the markets for the right reasons and not the wrong ones? And again, I think people lose sight of that. And I think, again, we've got people in these markets for the wrong reasons, and they don't belong in these markets.
And
because I don't think they're able to certainly handle the volatility that I think that's ahead of us, and certainly the accompanying risk. So I am concerned about that, but I agree with you. It is a travesty when people on Social Security and retired have to go back into the workforce because they don't have enough interest income and or other income in which to live on and live on comfortably the way they did in the past.
You know, so as we, you know, move forward here and we look at markets and we see valuations, you've been in this business for a long time. Tell me, what is the love affair with Amazon? A stock that's got a minus 1,254 P.E. ratio?
Well, I think, again, it's signifying the mania, and I think these markets are certainly in some degrees in areas in a mania. And I think people lose sight of the reality. Where's the value? You know, what are you actually buying? What do you actually own? I mean, you're owning a dream, you know, a dream which may not come to fruition. This is where you put your hard-earned money to work?
Well, and I agree with that, and that's, you know, I mean, so that's the problem I see. Now, I look at, you and I both lived through the internet bubble of the 90s.
Yes, we did.
Now, the difference between now and then is in the 90s, all you had to do is put .com. I mean, it could be joemeyer.com, and you'd be a billionaire. Okay,
absolutely.
Everybody would buy in. But now, actually, some of the companies have real earnings. But when you look at Tesla, Netflix, Amazon, I mean, yeah, they make money. Well, Tesla doesn't make any money yet. They did on the tax credits. But, I mean, Amazon has the ability to make money, and Netflix is making money. But they're so far overvalued in my eyes, I don't see the true potential going forward. What do you see?
Well, I think the shares are fully valued and ridiculously fully valued, and I think there's only one way for them to go, and it's just a question of not again if, but when down. You know, people should be selling these things, not buying them, Todd.
Well, that is, I agree with that as well when we look at it. And so what would you be telling, you've been around, so what would you tell a person of, let's say, 25 years old, how would you be telling them to invest today?
Well, I think, first of all, we got to wait for a halfway decent correction in this equity market. I think it's long overdue, and I think when we get the correction, it may be far more severe than a lot of people would want to believe. You know, people are looking for a 10-15% correction, but I've got to tell you, I think we're on the cusp of a generational bear market. I think when this market starts down, it's just going to keep going. You know, two areas where I think we could certainly touch upon, you know, in this upcoming bear market, I think we could probably test the 2007 high, 14,164. I think it would probably, you know, be some halfway decent support on the way down. And if that level didn't hold, then I think we'd have to go back to the 2000 peak, 11,780, which would be a secondary reactionary low from which, you know, we probably exhaust this oncoming bear market. But I think you've got to be fully defensive at this time. If you're going to come into these markets, I think you got to go back, you know, to the way we invested old school going back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s when markets were certainly facing difficulty. I think you've got to look at the foods, you've got to look at the beverages, you've got to look at the tobaccos, you've got to look at certainly the staples of the economy that are going to be resistant, certainly to the price erosion I think we're going to see in the general market as this market finally goes through a correction, Todd. I really believe that.
No, and I'm with you. And again, one thing we know for sure, though, the market does not make an announcement saying it's going to correction. And I think one of the things you'll start to see, do you follow the VIX index much? Is that one of your things you watch?
Well, I'm a Dow theorist, and, you know, one of the things that I'm very concerned with, and I'm sure you'll agree, you know, when this market was making, you know, new highs, we weren't getting confirmation from the transports. More importantly, we weren't getting confirmation from the utility index as well, and that was an indicator that signaled trouble to me early on.
So when we look at this, and there's a dramatic divergence between the Dow and the S&P right now.
Yes, there is.
In fact, we have never been wider apart. Now, just to give you everybody a little bit of perspective, typically that spread used to trade based on the futures at about $10,000 difference. In other words, the S&P futures are, let's say, 2,100 right now, which would be the value of that contract on the mini S&P basis is 105,000. And the Dow is trading right now at 17,500, which is about 87,000. So
right.
There's over a $15,000 or an $18,000 difference in the depths of the stock market collapse in 08. Actually, the Dow was worth more than the S&P. How do you explain that divergence, and does it concern you?
Well, it concerns me very much because it's a premium that certainly I don't agree with at this juncture of where these markets are. And I think it's signaling once again that this market is tired and we're getting ready for a reversal. That's what it signals to me.
And so when we have these things happen, you know, it makes it interesting. And when we come back, I want to talk about the Dow theory because it's my question is, and these are something you can think about as we're getting ready to go to break, but is the Dow really still the Dow? Because, of course, when you had the industrials, we were an industrial nation. We're now a tech nation, not an industrial nation. So does the Dow theory, the way that you remember it, still hold up? And that's what I'm going to ask you when we come back. But you can think about it as we go to break here. I am with Joe Meyer from Straight Money Analysis, also is an arbitrator for FINRA. Been around for only a slight 44 years. We're going to step out of a break and we'll be back. But I mean, Joe's does a great job and really understands it. And one of the things we talk about, and you should listen to what he said, because again, it's not me talking. We are putting together a subscription-based webinar series on how to hedge your portfolio right here from the Bubba Show. And I'm telling you that you're making one of the biggest mistakes you'll make in your investing career if you don't get yourself involved in that. I will get more details as soon as they're available, but I want to make sure that we teach you how to protect what's yours, which is your money. Also, make sure you check out our friends at Thinkorswim, built by traders for traders. Great stuff every single day from them at their website, at the swim lessons. So very important. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. Okay, we have a lot of great articles, a lot of great stuff, and again, we continue to build for our membership to help you, and membership is free, and there are some other subscription services there. But in the meantime, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bob Wars. We're going to step by here for a break, and we'll be right back with more from Joe Meyer after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We are with Joe Meyer from StraightMoneyAnalysis.com. He has a quarterly newsletter. Check out his website. Check him out. Also does work for FINRA for a million years. Has been in the industry for 44 years. So I asked you a question as we're going to break, and my question is simply, is the Dow Jones Industrial, is Dow theory still applicable in your opinion? If so, why? If not, why not?
Well, I think it's still applicable, but not in a way we once certainly used it and respected it. And I think you touched upon a very interesting point, Todd, prior to break. I think when you look at the composition, certainly of the Dow, as we look at what the composition was when we were an industrial power, it has certainly changed dramatically. You know, we've got industry groups in the Dow now very heavily weighted. So I think we do get distortions in what these indicators are actually telling us as we go back and we look at the theory as it had applied over previous both bull and bear markets. But I think when you look at that, it's only one indicator that I think you got to hang your hat on when you look at these markets, and you've got to look at what is the potential moving ahead and certainly what is the risk. I think when you look from a cyclical analysis, you know, we get seven-year cycles. We're coming up against the seven-year cycle of this move. Usually seven-year cycles, you know, when they exhaust themselves, usually lead to a pretty nasty correction and or short bear market. So I think there's a lot here that is telling us that this market is running out of time. I think it's coming up against exhaustion. And we're having trouble holding these rallies with back-to-back advances that you'd like to see, which would be signaling the all clear that this market is going to attempt to move higher. So I come back to what I've said many times. I think it's a time to be defensive. It's a time to take money off the table, raise some cash. You know, people lose sight of, Todd, the fact, and I know you'll agree with this, that cash is an investment class in itself. Nothing wrong with holding some cash and waiting for a better buying opportunity.
I like to buy new mattresses myself because that's where I want to put my cash right now. But, you know, we look around, Joe, and we you know, and I are of the same opinion. And, you know, it's hard to convey to the average guy that, you know, again, we're not sending out the alarm bells here. We're not telling you sell everything, get out. We're saying, hey, take a little bit of profit off the table. Take some of that big money, if you've been able to withstand and get back in here, you know, take a little bit off and look for a better opportunity. You can always buy it if it continues to go higher, but I can tell you from a mathematical standpoint and a probability model that it will not go higher forever, and there will be a tremendous sell-off. And in my opinion, the longer that the Fed stays involved, the longer that we allow, we don't have free markets, we don't have capitalism, we put small business out of work, and we have jobs that suck, it's going to be a bigger problem. And the longer they try to hold up, the harder the fall. What do you think?
Couldn't agree with you more. You know, people have to understand, and you touched upon a very interesting point. You can always come back in the market at an opportune time. You know, markets are going to be here for a long, long time. And traders and investors, they have a short-term horizon. They think they have to be fully invested 100% of the time and the capital has to be working. You know, I've seen many opportunities come to pass in the market where investors say, I wish I had sold prior. I could have put some money to work in a better position than the one I'm currently holding that I'm now losing money on. You know, nothing wrong with taking a profit. Nothing wrong with raising some cash. Nothing wrong with stepping aside and letting these markets clear. You know, people don't do it, and they wonder why they're not successful in the market. They're the problem, Todd, not the market.
Yeah, well, and again, the one thing I wrote in my book, that the market is the nemesis. It never gets sick. It never gets tired. It's got no emotion. It just does what everybody else tells it to do. And unfortunately, when you try to fight money, for example, if you've been fighting the Fed for the last 5 years, you've been getting your ass kicked because the markets have gone higher. And it doesn't matter why. You and I can talk fundamentals. Now, I'm a technical trader first, but what I tell everybody, and I'm going to get your opinion on this, is like a company for fundamental reasons, but trade it when it becomes technically a buy or a sell, because at that point, that's what really gives you the best bet. I mean, Apple, when it collapsed from 700 to 350 after it had record earnings and the best earnings quarter of any company ever in the history and then went straight down, fundamentally, it was a great company. It didn't change, but technically, it was no longer a buy. It was very similar to where the markets are now, which is probably overvalued and exhausting. What do you think?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think people have to put in perspective and understand we have witnessed a historic momentum liquidity-driven rally. You can't stand in front of these momentum liquidity-driven rallies because they're going to do one thing. They're going to drive the high valuations. And again, you could look at the fundamentals, and maybe some companies didn't participate as well as you would have believed initially in the advance off the lows in 2009. But again, if the technicals were signaling that the stock is heading higher, you had to own it. And if you were comfortable with the fundamentals, there was no reason for you not to. That's what I think people lose sight of, Todd.
So here we are, and we're in almost the seventh year of the bull market. We're actually, I guess, in the seventh year coming up, and we've got an election. Now, a lot of people talk, well, always the election years are up years. And now, you and I both have seen this happen, and typically, markets typically collapse, and they have those big breaks, and usually they start their cycles usually around that the fourth quarter, like usually September, October is when we've seen over history the biggest market breakdowns and meltdowns in history.
Absolutely. So, I think you look at the months of May and October, historically they've led to the most serious declines we've witnessed in the equity markets. But getting back into an election year, as you know, typically markets go up into the election and down afterwards.
So, of course, this election looks like it's going to be ugly, but it's going to be, we got a bunch of, listen, the whole cycle of politics is ugly. And of course, it goes back to the manipulation of markets and capitalism. What is your take, Joe, on the jobs number coming up on Friday? You have any opinion? You have any feel?
Well, I don't believe the numbers are number one. I think we're creating certainly a far lower number of jobs than's being reported. And then more importantly, I think you got to look at the quality of the jobs that they're creating. These are not decent wage-paying full-time positions. These are part-time minimum wage positions. You wonder why we're seeing housing at an eight-year low. You can't earn enough today working as a young person to be able to get together the down payment to even begin to buy a home. And even if the bank went ahead and gave you the mortgage, you don't have enough disposable income to make the payment. So I couldn't agree with you more. I think we've had intervention. I think we've had manipulation. I think we've had bogus information coming into these markets that people want to hang their hat on and believe. And that comes back to what you and I discussed earlier, the underlying risk that I think has been beneath the surface in all these markets, and I think people have lost sight of that fact, Todd.
And I could not agree more with you, Joe. I think that we, and that's typically at the top, you know, greed sets in. I mean, margin debt is at record highs.
Yes, it is.
Mergers and acquisitions usually signal a market that's getting toppy because the companies themselves are now supporting everybody else. So when it ends, and again, this is not, I don't want you to put your risk, you know, your career, or not your career, but your reputation as solid as it is. Could we have a 50% correction?
Well, I don't think you could rule it out. I think when you look at the corrections we had before, I think when you look at the correction we had in 2007 and 8, and you look at the painful correction we had after the 2000 top, you know, I've said many times, I never believed, and I know I probably stand alone in this fact, that we actually saw the bear market bottom at 6470 in the Dow. You know, honestly, Todd, I thought we would work lower. I thought the fundamentals and the technicals were indicating and signaling we would work lower. But the Fed stepped in here and has done what it's continued to do, and these markets have been momentum liquidity driven, and we never really got, I felt, the flush out and the wash out in equity prices and valuations that we would have had the Fed not stepped in when they did. So I think a 50% correction, I don't think you can rule it out. I don't know if it's a possibility or it's likely, because I think the central banks of the world in unison and the Fed in general will fight any decline tooth and nail. You know, they're holding up the equity markets as being an indicator of the U.S. economy. I don't think it's an indicator of anything at this point. You know, I think it's a market that's going higher, and I think you and I will agree for all the wrong reasons and not the right ones.
Joe Meyer, StraightMoneyAnalysis.com. Thank you so much for joining the Bubba Show. It was great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me, Todd. It was a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience.
This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. See you tomorrow. I got a
feeling. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.